listening to The Ouachita Chronicles.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Ashley.
You sound much better.
I feel much better. It's nice to be able to just breathe. You know, you don't think about it, but that's absolutely necessary for living.
Okay, well, we're going to do just a real quick PSA because, you know, like the rest of the country, we've been aware of COVID-19,
mm-hmm.
but luckily for us, we are isolated in a small town, rural town in the mountains, the Ouachita Mountains. And while we've had plenty of cases here, we've not had quite the numbers that other areas have had. So we've been very lucky to get away with taking the minimal precautions and still remaining healthy. There's not been a whole lot of spread in our area, but Jerry got the COVIDs.
Didn't I? Oh, it was horrible, but we're over it now. We've done the quarantine period. I can breathe all as well. I can laugh without feeling like my life is going to end.
So you were one of those who was not exactly flippant about it, but being a, you know, on the younger side, mm-hmm. healthy adult, you weren't really truly worried so much if you caught it. It's not like you were going to, you know, have fatality from it or anything like that. But what was your experience?
That's a whole nother podcast.
Well, I'm saying this because it was much worse than what you thought.
It was much worse than what I anticipated. And I'm fairly well read with news and things like that, being as it's part of my job description. But my personal experience with the symptoms and what to expect was nothing like what the news articles I had read would have led me to believe. And I've learned that it's very much a virus that affects each individual differently. And so that's why there is such a wide range of symptoms and prognosis as to how it develops with each individual. So just y'all stay safe out there, love each other, and follow those guidelines as best you can to keep our community safe and well.
It's definitely scary stuff, and now she knows firsthand. So don't worry about us. We're continuing our hand washing and social distancing as needed. So as Jerry said, for sure, stay safe, take care of yourselves. We're going to switch gears real quick and talk about, you know, who was our guest on the episode today. And I'm going to throw it back to Jerry for this too, because as you may know, listeners, Jerry is not a native to Mena or the Ouachitas, but she spent a fair amount of time here in her younger years. And she's been here, you know, living as her home for several years. Our guest today, she works in many capacities, but one of her main jobs is promoting tourism for Mena. And Jerry, so, you know, what's some of the things that you didn't know about Mena prior to moving here, or just anything regarding tourism in general?
Well, at first, I'd just like to say how vital, how absolutely critical that role at the Chamber and with tourism here is for Mena, for Polk County. Growing up, I'm from Mena, Louisiana, and so many of the tourists here are from Louisiana, are from Texas, are from Oklahoma, that easy drivable weekend distance type range. And so many of my friends growing up or other family members, this is the vacation spot. This is where they go to relax and enjoy recreation. And without having the events or getting that message out, it would be a critical loss to not appreciate that position and those efforts.
Right, right. It'd be a huge, huge blow to the economy yes. for Polk County if tourism was not an option. And the job that our guest does, as I said, it's vital. She promotes tourism to the area. She is the director of the Mena Polk County Chamber of Commerce, which is the oldest and largest business organization in the area. So she's always there as a great resource or a helping hand for local businesses. She puts in countless hours to promote the community. And as you'll hear me talk about in the podcast later, a lot of that goes very unappreciated or underappreciated because it is such an important role, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So let's meet our guest, the director of the Mena Polk County Chamber of Commerce and the director of marketing for tourism for the Mena Advertising and Promotion Commission, Ms. Pasha Watson. Welcome to this episode of the Ouachita Chronicles. I am your host, Ashley Smith, along with my co-host, Jerry.
Barely here.
Jerry's barely here. Jerry is masked up in the interest of public safety. So if her voice sounds a little bit muffled, then, I mean, she's basically got a gag on.
Which I know is your dream come true. Is like, okay, I'm here participating, but she can't really talk, so.
Are you reading my mind?
I am.
She is. Our guest today is Pasha Watson. Pasha Watson is the director of the Mena Polk County Chamber of Commerce, as well as the marketing director for the City of MENA's Tourism Department, their Advertising and Promotion Commission. So welcome to the show, Pasha.
Well, thank you for having me, and good morning.
We are excited to have you. Yeah. Good morning. And we're trying to make it a good morning. I'm in one of those, I'll just say I'm in a stabby mood today.
And she's wielding a pen that she keeps clicking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not Monday.
But it feels like it's been Monday every day this week. And it kind of probably feels like that at the chamber, that it feels like it's been Monday every day since COVID hit, would be my guess.
That would be absolutely accurate.
Accurate assessment of that situation, wouldn't it? For sure. So listeners, if you're not familiar with my personal history as your host, if you haven't gone on and read my bio anywhere online, what are you waiting for? But I'll give you a quick rundown. Prior to serving in my current position and then getting the opportunity to co-host this super cool show that we're enjoying the heck out of, I was the director of the Chamber of Commerce here in MENA, and Pasha and I worked together. So when I left that position and, you know, they were hiring for a new person, Pasha was obviously the natural fit. I mean, I knew she was going to get it. There was absolutely no doubt in my mind. So now she has been serving as the director for what, we're over a year now, I think?
Working on a year and a half.
Okay. So Pasha, just, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I know this stuff. I mean, you know, it's no surprise to me, but our listeners don't. So you are originally from Broken Bow, Ida Bell area?
All my family's over around Broken Bow and Eagletown.
Okay. So, you know, already pretty much a local, but you spent a good number of years living in Texas before you moved back to the Ouachitas.
Correct. Many, many years in Texas. And we kept vacationing up here. Of course, you know, family, and still had ties to the area. But we kind of decided one day, and over many years of looking, and that why are we living our lives backward?
Mm-hmm.
This is where we love to be. So we sold everything and made the move, and no regrets.
No regrets whatsoever. You know, Pasha had been working at another job previously before coming on to work with me at the chamber. And when we were interviewing Pasha for that position, the things that she brought to the table just made it, you know, a very easy choice. Let's talk a little bit about some of the cool things you did in Texas before you moved here, because specifically the outdoor magazine that you had going on over there, because that was a top-notch publication from what I saw.
Yeah, thank you. That was truly a labor of love, mm-hmm. East Texas Outdoors Magazine. We had it for almost 3 years. We started it when the drought hit in 11 in Texas, which for our advertising base, we started it at the absolutely wrong time. So it proved
to be
very...
It'd be like starting during COVID.
Yeah,
for tourism. Right, yes, okay.
It proved to be very challenging. Loved the work. I loved all the people that we got to meet and the events that we were able to attend and cover. Ultimately, that was a very expensive proposition, so... Mm-hmm. We had to put it to rest,
as it were.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no regrets doing that either. I learned a lot, and it was a really cool process to go through.
So. Right. So you already had that outdoors background experience. You already had a love for nature, and especially kind of sharing the things that, that people do, you know, to enjoy time outside. So, you know, when you came here, as I mentioned before, it was a really natural fit to get you in at the chamber, and especially for you to start working with tourism, because your whole purpose, I mean, like you said, you were living life backwards. You thought, why are we not there? We love it there. But you kind of had a plan in the back of your head for what you wanted to do here. Vacation rentals, correct?
Correct. And the best laid plans of mice and men, right? So fast forward 4.5 years, we had our property when we moved up here. But the business plan side of that has not come to fruition. And I have to be honest with you, I'm so glad that it hasn't. Because when COVID hit, if we would have been saddled with everything the way that it was originally intended, I would have probably had a minor stroke. Oh, nobody can come here. You can't rent out your vacation rentals. So there goes your income. So
are there still plans to open that eventually at some point?
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Cautiously optimistic.
Maybe we can do a follow-up episode at some point if it gets to there.
Well, that would be amazing.
We can talk about that.
And as you were talking about the opportunity with the chamber, I want to publicly express my gratitude for
the opportunity.
Stop it. It's been challenging, which is good, but it's been a really cool experience to sit in those positions and feel like you're making an impact on what happens in the community. So
it is. It's a very rewarding job, a very high-stress job, a very in-the-public-eye job. But the rewards, I mean, on the other side of it, I can look at it and say it was about 50-50. I'm not going to just try to wax philosophical and say that the rewards outweigh the trials of the job. But it's about 50-50, and you are doing good things for the community. And that is a very natural segue into our next, you know, topic here, is talking about the chamber and what the chamber functions as and does for the community of MENA. But specifically, I've got a little quick story to tell about Pasha's first week at the chamber. So Pasha, as most of the people who work with me, they kind of get just thrown right into the fire immediately, because anywhere I'm at, it's really fast, furious. Jerry, I think you can... who can speak to that.
Producer Trey can definitely speak to that.
Producer Trey, he's over there, got a sheepish look, nodding the head behind the headphones. Very fast and furious. So the week that Pasha started at the chamber was actually the week we were holding our annual chamber banquet. A dinner for 350 people, very large venue, entertainment. We even had alcohol that year, right? Yep, that was the first year, wasn't it? And so Pasha was immediately thrown into, hey, we're putting on an event in like 4 days, and that's all we're going to do for the next 4 days is get ready for this event. I'm not going to tell you anything about what we actually do at the chamber. We just have to get this event done. And the look on her face was like about 5 seconds of, what have I gotten myself into? And then she immediately went to work. And I could not have asked for a better colleague to work with. I mean, those large events are always difficult and somewhat of a fiasco. You remember how I always had the dreams about a week before whatever event we were putting on that the worst possible thing could go wrong? Probably 3 days prior to that, I had dreamed that I was actually up on the stage in front of all the chamber members not wearing pants. So that was sheer terror for me. Those premonition dreams. But kind of give me a rundown of what your impression was of literally what you'd gotten yourself into that first week.
Oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? No, it was fast. It was furious. I think you're the master of that controlled chaos. And that's really what it was, because that's an insane event. I mean, it's a beast. Mm-hmm. There's so many moving parts, so many things to pull together, so many details to make sure that they are checked off.
People don't realize the amount of work that goes into even a one-day event. They just don't.
It means you're doing it right.
Right, exactly. If they don't see all the trouble and the chaos, then you're pulling it off correctly. But as far as the chamber banquet goes, that was your very first one to attend. And as I said, it was trial by fire. You were thrown right in. And you didn't even have a really good rundown of what it was we were doing or why we were doing it.
We would get to that later.
Right, exactly. But you were all hands ready to help, and you definitely helped pull it off. But as far as chamber banquets go and what you guys have got planned, let's just visit a little bit about what the chamber in general does here in MENA, you know, a lot of the benefits that go on, and then we'll visit some about the events. But as far as the chamber goes, because you've been there for a year by yourself now without me, and you're doing great. So, you know, if I was a prospective chamber member, why would I need to join?
Well, firstly, the chamber is the oldest business organization in Polk County.
Mm-hmm.
And we are advocates for the community at large, too. The events that we do, from the chamber banquet, of course, that's to our chamber members and their guests,
mm-hmm.
To the Queen Wilhelmina Rod Run, Wichita Art Celebration, the Christmas Parade. And not only does it draw out the community, so you have that sense of everyone having the chance to come together, it increases tourism, which enhances our businesses. So
keeps that money flowing in town.
And my estimation, it's the best bang for your buck. Listing on the website, all your materials go out in our vacation and relocation packets,
mm-hmm.
and they're in the visitor center, which mm-hmm. is well-traveled.
Very well-traveled.
And I have to say, with COVID, we were expecting the worst, and we have actually weathered this really well.
Right.
With the amount of tourism, I think because mm-hmm. people were getting away from the chaos of the city,
mm-hmm.
and we've had the best place for social distancing.
I was going to say, MENA's kind of perfectly set up as an escape from COVID. It really, truly is.
So not that we didn't feel the impact of it, but not to the degree that we were anticipating.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of all of our community and our business owners for being so fluid and flexible and mm-hmm. adapting to the changes that were coming so mm-hmm. quickly.
Well, and the benefits that you offer as a chamber, because there are multiple, I mean, people aren't aware of all of them for sure when they think about chamber membership, because a lot of times they've still got that idea of that old school chamber in their head. And the things that I laid down when I was there and that you have continued to do, I mean, chamber membership in MENA has just grown immensely from the time that I started, and it's continued to grow with you. But you know, those benefits, they're really invaluable. And if you're not a member of the chamber, I mean, I'll probably say this several times throughout this episode, you've got to go talk to Pasha about it. If you're a business owner and you're not a member, you need to look into it. It's totally worth it. What are the chamber's plans as far as post-COVID or just throughout 2021?
I would like to mention that January is our membership drive, and mm-hmm. we are waiving our application fee.
Okay.
So do take advantage of that. We are looking to, still trying to be safe and adhere by all the Department of Health guidelines, we are looking to do a Depot Dash 5K for our foundation, which supports our scholarships that we do every year.
Mm-hmm.
April 17th is our prospective date.
Okay.
Of course, we have to submit our event plans, and, mm-hmm. and there's lots of little things to get mm-hmm. together before we actually get there, and just keeping our fingers crossed that our numbers continue to stay low and that we can submit a plan that the Department of Health will approve and everybody can come out and have fun. And it gives us a chance to do something that involves the community. Mm-hmm. We can be socially distanced and everybody can have mm-hmm. a good time and support a good cause.
Right.
Now, we are moving forward on the advertising and promotion side. With Lum and Abner, we're going to be opening up the vendor applications in February. Mm-hmm. So we are going to proceed as if we are going to have all of our events that we traditionally have had. Same with the Rod Run and Christmas, all those things that we traditionally do. Our mm-hmm. banquet has been moved.
Everything that got canceled in 2020, as of now, it's scheduled for 2021.
That's our intent. Mm-hmm. So unless everything comes undone again and they shut us completely down,
right,
we're going to come back just as hard and fast mm-hmm. as we can. I know everybody's looking to get out and mm-hmm. do stuff, and we encourage that. I think the community needs it, mm-hmm. and individuals need that mm-hmm. sense of togetherness and belonging and camaraderie.
As hard as the businesses have been hit by this situation, the nonprofits have been hit even harder. It cannot hold fundraising events, just like you said, because all those events that the chamber itself puts on, I mean, that's fundraising for the chamber, for operating money, for scholarship money, to be able to do the cool things that you do for the community. So
absolutely correct.
It's been so hard on the nonprofits.
Yeah, those things that are just completely out of your control. And so you have to really get outside of your traditional box of this is how we operate. These are the things that we lean on for our operating capital mm-hmm. and be creative. Right. What can we do different? How can we adapt to this situation and make those revenue streams come alive in a different way?
You're going
to
run in the 5K?
Well, if I wasn't operating the event,
then she starts stumbling over her words.
You can pull me in a wagon.
Yeah, we can get you in a wagon.
I'll follow you in the Ranger.
I've often heard Pasha say before, if I'm running, there's something chasing me. So
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure, for sure. All right, well, Pasha, we were just visiting about events. So let's talk more about those in depth, because I mentioned a minute ago that no one has any idea the amount of work that goes into putting these events together. And when you are the chamber director or in a position even on the board at the chamber, you are in the direct line of public criticism that is coming from people who have never planned more than a birthday party in their entire life. So the kind of flack, you have to have a very, very strong backbone to be in that position. Thick skin, you've got to be able to deal with all of that, because people will, they'll just rip apart every little thing you do and every little mistake that happens, but they have no idea the amount of time, the amount of responsibility, the sleepless nights that goes into that. So let's actually detail what specific events and kind of what goes on with those. And we'll start with, let's just kind of give it a start with Lum and Abner, because Lum and Abner is the biggest.
Well, they were actually kind of local celebrities, and back through the 30s to the 50s, they did movies and whatnot. There is a museum out at Pine Ridge mm-hmm. that people can visit.
Jot 'em Down Store.
The Jot 'em Down Store. Mm-hmm. So they were, again, local celebrities from Cove and
Mena, I believe. One of them was in Mena, I think. It was, what, Norris Goff and Chet Locke. Correct. Right. And they were actually much younger than what they portrayed themselves as on the radio. I mean, this was a comedic act. And they weren't just famous locally. I mean, this was a nationwide. Mm-hmm. It was the longest running, and producer Trey will probably have to fast back some of this stuff, but I want to say it was one of the longest running syndicated radio shows of its type, and had extremely large sponsors in that time period of like Quaker Oats and I think Ford. Right. I mean, yeah, right. Big stuff, really. And they went on to make, I want to say, like 7 movies total.
That's, yeah, from what I've read, that is correct. Yeah. And Pine Ridge used to be, I believe it was in 1931, they officially changed the name to Waters because of the mm-hmm. From Waters to Pine Ridge because of the popularity of the show.
Pine Ridge was a fictional place that they were talking about, but they were kind of basing it there, and they wanted to gain on that popularity, I think, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That's cool. The history of Lum and Abner, it really is pretty interesting, and there's people who are still Lum and Abner fans. There's a Lum and Abner fan club. There's still a Lum and Abner comic strip. You can find places to listen to their old radio shows, but the portion of this that I can't recall is exactly how they decided that they wanted to center the festival around that, because used to, Lum and Abner was like a week-long thing. It was a week-long thing. There was music every night in the park, all kinds of different things that went on.
I read somewhere or heard somewhere, maybe it was over a month, in fact.
Okay, maybe a month. Yes, yes. I think I have. Fast fact that again. I have a history of Lum and Abner Festival somewhere. We'll have to dig that out. But, I mean, they brought in like Air Force bands and local bands. And, I mean, every single night there was music. I don't think they added the vendor aspect to it until a little bit later. I think it originally started as a music festival.
That was my understanding.
Did they call it a music festival or a hootenanny or something of that?
Hootenanny, yeah. You go back to Louisiana, uh-huh. Jerry. Uh-huh. Hootenanny, okay? The Lemon Abner Hootenanny. Oh my gosh, can you please change the name? Please, hold on. We just hit on something. The Lemon Abner Hootenanny.
I'm telling you.
Take that to the AMP for approval ASAP, okay?
I'm envisioning the shirts and the...
Yes! Hootenanny.
Okay. What those graphics look like.
Okay, Jerry, you're allowed to come back to Arkansas. That was gold. That was gold. So Lemon Abner, you know, basically a music festival, but not the kind of music festival we're envisioning with girls in hula hoops and fringe and Indian headdresses, but not turn of the century, but old style picnic. The families coming out to Janssen Park and watching, you know, these bands like every single night. I mean, and they would say that there was hundreds and hundreds of people there. It was hugely popular because obviously there wasn't a whole lot to do when that was started. And this is another thing, is trying to remember when it actually transitioned to more of, you know, vendors and to the format it is today.
And there was a gap in there as well where
they didn't have
it. They didn't have it.
Yes.
It's been picked back up with the last 10 years or so and really transformed more to what it looks like now.
I feel like the AMP revived it around the early 90s, like 93, 90, maybe before or after the tornado. I want to say that the AMP brought it back. We'd have to check the exact date on that. But when the AMP brought it back is when they started adding these components to it.
I don't know, but like if you're hanging out with everybody in town's doing a little jig down at the park for a month's time.
At the Hootenanny.
Like people are going to want their soda pop, their fried foods.
Their bubble gums
and soda pops. Like they're going to want access to convenience. So it would only be natural that vendors would pop up just amongst themselves and bring all their wares to sell to people.
Do you think there was a mob that was just shouting, give us our funnel cake now?
Funnel cake? You think they had funnel cake?
Yeah, I actually think funnel cake is a very, very old vendor.
Let's fast facts funnel cake at the end.
So in addition to organizing the event, you're scheduling the music that's going to be there, the entertainment that's going to be there. Entertainment is in like, you know, the bounce houses and the petting zoos and all that fun stuff that's going on. You're also dealing with scheduling and approving hundreds of vendors, not to mention placing them in the spots that they need to go, the entire layout of the event. And the event's held in Janssen Park. But you're also in charge of marketing the event to the local area, region, state, and beyond to get people to come here for this. You know, so your first year at Lemon Abner with me, what was that like for you? Had you ever worked on something of that scale?
No, that thing is actually massive. Again, there's so many moving parts and pieces. The tents have to be there, the stage, where is that going to sit? And getting all the electricity to
getting
everything.
The bids for the stage to pick the stage before you can even do it.
And it's from beginning to end, and those are two very long days.
Well, it's like 5 long days because of the prep, people arriving early, the whole event, and then the teardown and the cleanup. Goodness.
Look, I'm getting exhausted just listening to y'all talk about this. I believe that first festival I volunteered to help you fold and sort t-shirts. And I think after about 2 hours worth of folding and sorting t-shirts, I was beat. And that was all I did to contribute. And so I can't imagine all of that goes into that. It's exhausting just to hear y'all talk about it.
I can recall that Pasha and I, at one point, we just looked at each other and just agreed that if we were to even sit our rear ends down in a chair to take a break, we weren't getting back up.
Yep,
it was not happening. So you are going 24/7. I mean, I remember myself getting to the park at 5:30, 6 in the morning and not leaving till 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
And the festival didn't even really kick off till 10 a.m.
There's so many things to get in motion before the doors open,
right,
so to speak.
So. Right. So what's on the schedule? What's on tap for Lemon Abner this year? Because of the fact it takes so long to plan. You mean you literally basically start planning the next year's event once that year's event is over. Now, you weren't able to hold Lemon Abner last year for 2020. Darn you, COVID. I'm sure Lemon Abner would have a whole lot to say about COVID if they could. Right.
Well, we were so far in the process. We had all of the, again, the tents. We had all the entertainment. All those things were scheduled. We had deposits down on headliners. All these things were in place. Mm-hmm. All the graphics, all the design work and everything had been done. Getting into our media buys, getting that close.
Did you have t-shirts ordered yet?
No.
Okay, good.
Thank goodness. So, can you imagine? It would have been dated and all of that would have been lost.
Mm-hmm.
So we're being very cautious, but it's going to, because we had so many things already in place and kind of unspoken or spoken rather agreements that everything kind of come undone, we'll pick up where we left off and try to get everything going again this year, because we were just a couple of months out when that all came to a screeching halt.
Right, because Lum and Abner is held the first Saturday in June, the first weekend in June of every year. Were you able to keep the bands on tap that you had planned to have last year?
As of now, and that is part of my going into this next month, is to reach out to everybody to see where they're at personally. How do they feel about traveling? Because some of our vendors, our entertainment, they come in from out of state. So it's really getting a gauge on, are they willing to fulfill their previous contracts?
Or, right, you know, right.
How are we going to move forward with that?
If they weathered COVID and are still even operating as what they were.
You know, these vendors and these gigs, they really have suffered greatly.
The entertainment industry, live entertainment industry as a whole.
Right.
You know?
I mean, from your people that provide your tents, your stage, your lighting, all of those things, they really got hit really hard this last year. So
yeah, because there was no events. Nothing, exactly. Nothing for them to go to. No money to be had anywhere because they weren't allowed to do anything. I can't imagine being in that business. Sometimes I think it's difficult being in advertising during this time. No. Events? Live events? Nope. Blown out of the water.
So again, we're moving forward with optimism. I want to say cautiously optimistic, but
cautiously optimistic.
I just want to, we want to have fun. We want to get things going again and get the community involved and get our tourists coming back. Like I said, we had a really good year, so I hope everybody comes back and to see us again and stay a little longer.
Yes, definitely. I think that my favorite part of Lum and Abner over the past few years was the fact that we incorporated golf carts.
Ooh. Golf carts are your friend.
Golf carts are your friend. Not only did we use those to shuttle, you know, guests at the event who, you know, might have had mobility issues, but you've got a pretty large area to get around during that whole thing.
I think that went over really good with the attendees and the workers as well.
So. Well, I'll share one of my favorite little ones. Our mayor, Mayor Smith, who's a terrific friend of the community, and, you know, once he was put into office, he really helped us out with Lum and Abner. I think that was the second year we held it that he was elected to office. And Mayor Smith has a golf cart. He's got a golf cart with some big, muddy, grippy tires on it. And all of the golf carts that we currently had were in use by other people, and I was needing one to get, like, back down to the depot, you know, basically a block or so from the park. And I'm telling on you, Seth, if you're listening to this, he comes screeching up in his golf cart, and he's jumped, like, three curbs in it already. And he says, "Here, Ashley, just take my golf cart." And I'm looking at this really nice kind of looking off-road golf cart. And I was like, "Are you sure about that? Like, you know, I got to go to, I just, you know, these other ones are rentals. I know there's, I'm just a little worried about using your personal one." He said, "Nope, just drive it like you stole it." I took his advice. I jumped like five curbs in it and didn't worry about screeching in anywhere.
Now that's what I call a hoot nanny.
That's a hoot nanny on a golf cart. Okay, so we're going to talk about another big event and the history and details and stuff of that. And that is the Queen Wilhelmina Rod Run. So in 1976, Mark Campbell, who was a local hot rod lover and the owner of a, well, hot rod business who produced all kinds of
street and performance.
Yeah, auto parts, street and performance, decided that he was going to start a car show in Mena. And the Queen Wilhelmina Rod Run was born. And this car show turned out to be something spectacular for the area. Not only did it bring, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people in every August, it was very popular and very well known due to Mark's business. He was able to market, you know, through all the people he shipped to, because street and performance is known worldwide. I mean, I've literally been across the country in California and seen someone wearing a street and performance shirt. It was very successful at the time and everything he did. He worked his rear end off with a great team of people to make that possible. And so Mark passed away in 2015. He passed away in 2015. And at that point, Mark's family, you know, was kind of like, it's a beast of an event too.
It is.
Okay, because this is a, you know, basically a 3-day, and if you throw everything in, 3-day car show event.
And three different locations.
In multiple locations. So his family at the time said, you know, this is too much for us to do without Mark. And the event was going to die. And that's when the Chamber of Commerce stepped in and said, we would like to help make sure that this continues, that this event perseveres. So when I started at the Chamber, that was 2017. It was only the second year that the Chamber had been, pardon the pun, at the wheel of the car show, right? And so I did the first one, the Chamber Board and I. And then when Pasha was brought on the next year, Pasha, myself, and Pasha's husband, Doc, who is an absolute saint on earth. He's amazing. And he grew up with the love of cars and attending car shows. And so I felt like I was absolutely blessed with an amazing team because, as Pasha mentioned, 3 days, three separate locations. I mean, this thing, it's huge. So let's give a little bit of a rundown on, you know, day one, what happens as far as, you know, the participants.
Well, this is always the last Friday and Saturday. Typically, we're back and forth on the Sunday thing because the attendance has been a little bit lower on our Sunday morning service before Labor Day. Mm-hmm. And everyone will come in on Friday, get their cars registered, and get their goodie bag and their shirts and whatnot. And then we do a parade. Mm-hmm. And that has turned out to be a really popular part of it.
Right. Well, I'll just a minute. Interject this real quick, that the first year I put on Rod Run, from the time I was hired at the chamber, I had 6 weeks to plan a car show that no planning had been done.
And this is upwards getting close to 200 registrants.
Uh-huh.
And that's not all the crowds that come. That's just the registration. So it is a really cool,
you should be planning
really big
it.
Event.
You should be planning it for 6 months.
And that's the, we mm-hmm. don't ever stop planning. We're always in mm-hmm. a phase mm-hmm. of planning something.
Yeah. So 6 weeks that first year, which is why it went well, but we didn't get a lot of extras added that first year. So the first year you were there, though, which was my second year, Hot Rod Parade started.
A pedal car raffle. And I think that's one of my favorite parts of it because mm-hmm. the creativity.
Of the pedal car. Paint job, yes.
That's a really cool thing.
It is. So. And the proceeds from that raffle do go to a charity. So that's pretty cool as well.
Right.
So on Friday night, you know, people get there, they register, they get their goodie bags, they check out the awesome designs on the t-shirts, purchase them some t-shirts, the parade happens, and you literally block off Mena Street from right. the depot all the way up to, what, like the Esso station, I think.
Right. Yeah. And so everybody can just walk down the sidewalk, stick their head in the shops that are open and mm-hmm. grab an ice cream or a mm-hmm. sandwich or any of the vendors that we have.
Right.
And just look at all the cars. And car people love to hang out and talk shop mm-hmm. and
they do.
Brag. And
yeah.
So it's a good time. It's a yeah. really a lot of fun.
And so it's I guess the car show name for it is a show and shine.
Right.
Yeah. Where
right.
they park and everybody just walks around and admires everyone else's cars and boosts those egos.
So instead of a hoot nanny, this is more of a show and shine shindig.
Okay. So now you've got new marketing material for Green Wilhelmina Rod Run. On Friday night, you're going to have the show and shine shindig. You wanted to visit a little bit about the designs on a cool feature of the t-shirts that are...
It's always based on the previous year's winning vehicle, so...
Of a specific award.
The Mark Campbell Award.
The Mark Campbell Award, because that was something new we instituted to, yeah, a remembrance of the founder of the event.
And the guy that designs those, he does all this freehand, so most of everything's computer generated anymore, so it's really a neat process that he goes through, and we are always surprised. We don't get to peek at the shirts until they actually arrive, mm-hmm. but he never fails to deliver a great product that everybody seems
right.
to love.
You so. Don't get to look at proofs and say, yes, we like that one. No, we don't like that one. You basically send him in a picture of the previous year's Mark Campbell Award car, and then he bangs it out, and you're like, wow, this is amazing.
But he's been doing it for years, and he delivers every time mm-hmm. something incredible that people love. So
I remember him being a very nice guy as well. So, okay. So that gets us through Friday night at Rod Run, and that is down in downtown Mena on Mena Street, on the north side of Mena Street. And then Saturday morning, bright and early, where are you at?
Going up the mountain to the Queen Wilhelmina Lodge.
The participants get to take that gorgeous 13-mile drive up the Talamina Scenic Byway, one of the most scenic drives in the country, but they get to take that all the way up to the top of Rich Mountain for the second day of the car show. And what all's going on up there?
Well, we do have vendors and whatnot, and everybody is, there are so many people that come up on the mountain to look. All of our registrants are there to show off their cars. Mm-hmm. And there's music and giveaways and a really good time. Mm-hmm. We have instituted, when you started mm-hmm. doing this, a poker run.
Yes, poker run. Mm-hmm.
And so they'll start drawing their hands on the mountain, and they'll go down back into town. Everything kind of around 2:00, mm-hmm. people start leaving the mountain and mm-hmm. going down and getting on the south side of Mena Street for the street dance.
Well, don't forget about the kids' corner, because that was a cool feature, because that keeps those kids occupied, something to do if they've gotten tired of looking at cars, you know, and lets their parents right. continue to do
they
that.
They have games and bounce houses and mm-hmm. things like that to let them have a little place to burn right. up all that extra energy and uh-huh. give the parents a little reprieve from
right.
chasing.
Well, the actual, you know, venue of being in Queen Wilhelmina State Park on top of Rich Mountain, first of all, the views are spectacular. But in doing research on it when I was still working it, I don't recall finding another car show like that that was held on top of a mountain.
No, we have the absolute coolest venue.
The coolest.
The coolest.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got a car that you want to bring to a car show, you need to come to Mena in August to this one, because you're just not going to find a cooler place to have one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, this is our 45th year of doing this.
Yeah.
So that gives you, longevity has to be an indicator of how absolutely
yes,
fantastic it is.
That people have a great, yeah. great time. Okay. So that, you kind of wrap up, you said around 4?
Between 2 and 3. And then everybody meets back downtown. They'll do the poker run for, you know, whoever's registered for for that.
Are you still having the poker run benefit the seniors?
Yes.
Let's definitely touch on that because that's super cool the way that poker run was set up.
Yep, that's exactly, we're continuing it the same way.
So basically those poker run stops are at the assisted living homes in MENA, nursing and rehabilitation homes, because there's so many of our elders who were going to Rod Run for years and years and years and years and years, and now they're in full-time care and they don't get a chance to get out and see that. So those people who are participating in the poker run are not only getting a chance to give back to charity because proceeds from the poker run go to CASA,
right,
but they're also getting to make an elderly person's day. And I can remember the first year we did it, a couple of the directors of the assisted living homes called afterwards and were just gushing about how amazing it was, how happy their senior citizens were. And the one guy that was in the wheelchair, they'd let him come outside and sit. And so when the cars would pull up for the poker run, they'd get to see them all.
Right.
Well, there was a convertible that came up. Do you remember this? The convertible. And so they wheeled the gentleman in his wheelchair around to the other side of the convertible, and the car owner got out of it and they took a photo so it looked like this gentleman was driving the convertible. And to me, like, that made it all worth it to me. Sure. All the work that went into it, just to get that feedback that one man was that, and like, he refused to go back in. Yeah, once the poker run's over, I mean, you're back down on South MENA Street for Saturday evening's event.
Right. And we typically have a vendor who is cooking that, again, benefits a charity.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a live band. All the awards are presented at that time. And again, with the basically show and shine where everybody's mm-hmm. walking down the street. And it's just almost a throwback. MENA has such a charming downtown. And to see all of these exquisite, mm-hmm. beautiful old hot rods. And
parked in a historic district. With old buildings. And
the street is full of people and mm-hmm. laughter. And it's just a great time.
Well, listener, if you want to get an idea of what Queen Wilhelmina Rod Run is like, being their first person, obviously come to MENA, okay? Just come to MENA, come visit us, come see what it's all about. But the event has its own website, so it's queenwilhelminarodrun.com. Right. But you can also go on YouTube to the MENA Polk County Chamber's YouTube page, and there's a series of videos on there that were shot by an extremely talented young man a couple years ago, and you can watch those videos, and it really gives you an idea of what being at Rod Run is like.
And we're also on Facebook, so those videos are out there as well, so I encourage everyone to out there and like those pages and see what everything that goes on, and I encourage you to attend. It's
pretty cool.
It is very cool.
It's pretty cool.
I keep saying the same thing, but it is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no other word for it. We could come up with some if we thought long enough, but do you have any good stories from Rod Run you want to share?
You know, these things, when you're on that side of it, of course, you're watching, trying to be in the moment and take mm-hmm. everything in, but you're working and you're working hard and you're focused and trying to make sure that everybody is having a good time. So mm-hmm. it's really about having that experience that you want them to have. So mm-hmm. yes, it's fun, but it's work.
It is work. It is definitely work. Because as you said, all the moving parts, the different locations, the different days, the scheduling of everything, it is a ton of work. But when you get to walk through it, when you get a little bit of a break and you get to walk from one end of the event to the other end, and you get to see people having fun and laughing and smiling and enjoying themselves, when you get to announce those awards and hand them out to people and they're just beaming, you know, they just love it. It definitely makes it worthwhile. The stories with, you know, the senior citizens. I mean, we were always really happy to be able to give back to charity through, you know, a couple components of the event. But it definitely makes it worth it. If you've ever had an issue or a criticism of any of the events that are put on in MENA, I'm just going to tell you, think twice about it. Because being put in the position of being in charge of those events, most people would melt into a puddle. They'd be just floored and couldn't handle it. So it takes a special type of person to be able to handle the immensely stressful pressure that is large event planning. So I applaud you for being able to do that.
Learn by example.
All right. So another part of your job, Pasha, is the MENA Polk County Chamber of Commerce has the contract with the city of MENA to handle marketing for tourism.
Correct.
Right.
Advertising and
promotion. So not only do you work, you know, under your board of directors at the chamber, you work with a city commission of 7 members, the Advertising and Promotion Commission.
Correct.
So there is, and we're just going to get this right out here and clear it up in case anyone ever had any questions about how the AMP is funded. So there is a lodging and restaurant prepared food tax.
Right.
There are 2 separate amounts, but that is just within the city of MENA. And those taxes collected are given to the AMP Commission for the express purpose of bringing more tourists to the area, marketing the area to tourism, to try to get people to come in and you know, to stimulate our economy here locally.
And those are very separate budgets, even within the city. That those mm-hmm. are not city funds. Those are advertising and promotion.
They are set aside funds specifically for that. And I've seen, because, you know, Facebook is a terrific platform for people to talk about things that they don't know about. I've seen where people have gone on and, you know, criticized, why do we have an A&P tax here locally? When I go out of town, I don't have to spend money like that, or my money isn't taxed. Well, actually, it is. You are going to be very hard-pressed to find a municipality that does not have an A&P tax. They might not have it on lodging. It might just be on the prepared food, or they might not have it on the prepared food. They just have it on lodging. Anyone who thinks that you're going out of town and you're spending money and some of that money is not going back into that area's advertising promotion, I mean, it's just wrong.
The Lum and Abner Festival, mm-hmm. July 4th Festival.
The fireworks.
Mm-hmm. The Christmas Festival.
Right.
McMillan Park, Tapley Park, all those things that mm-hmm. are funded through the new bike trails that are being developed.
Right.
All are funded through the A&P tax. Mm-hmm. So these funds are put to good use that go back to the community to mm-hmm. help. They do have some set aside for matching grants. If you go out and you need $50,000 to match a grant, those funds have to be in the coffers of the A&P mm-hmm. so they can have access to those grants. So.
Right. Grants aren't generally fully funded. So most all of them that the A&P would be applying for are matching grants of some sort. But this, I mean, honestly, this is just what gets me is, you know, someone who is going to gripe about an A&P tax on prepared food. And so they go out to eat here locally in Mena and they drop $100 on their dinner at a restaurant. And, you know, they get the bill. What tax is that?
1%.
1% on $100. So if you're upset about there being a 1% tax on the $100 dinner that you just purchased locally when you just dropped $100 on dinner. Now that $100 you spent locally on dinner, obviously that's helping to pay the salaries of everyone who works at that restaurant, keep that restaurant in business. But that 1% that is going to the upkeep of Tapley Park to bring more tourism to the area, to, you know, spend money and keep our economy going, to put on these festivals, to do all these amazing things that the A&P actually does for the area, you got to stop griping about it.
Well, and the place for the kids to play their baseball and their soccer, so mm-hmm. a direct benefit mm-hmm. to the community.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, a lot of it is just misinformation. People, they're not aware of what the Advertising and Promotion Commission actually does, what it was started for. Or, you know, what its purpose, you know, it is to collect and manage that tax money.
Correct.
So like you said, it is different from the city coffers. So if you've ever had a, you know, a question or a complaint about what you think the Advertising and Promotion Commission is doing, I would just highly suggest that you educate yourself on what their purpose is. Your purpose is not to repair the playground equipment in Jansen Park. That's a city thing.
City, right?
That is the city parks and rec department. That's not the A&P. So, you know, please just look into it and do some digging before, you know, criticizing the people that are trying very hard to make the community better. So on the topic of tourism in Mena, you know, you are responsible for spending that budget to bring more tourists in. So let's talk about why Mena is such an awesome place to vacation.
There are so many things to do here.
What's Mena's slogan?
Base Camp for Mountain Adventures.
Base Camp for Mountain Adventures. That all came about because, as I've mentioned before, the geographic anomaly we are, that we're about an hour and a half away from anything larger than us, right?
Right.
So you get to come to Mena, you enjoy your time here in Mena, but you can make it your base camp. I mean, that's the whole kind of premise there.
Yeah, if you want to go downtown and visit, we have a Ouachita Coffee Roasters.
The Ouachitas.
Mm-hmm. And change to the Ouachitas. They now have a brewery. There's no stone unturned there. Their attention to detail, it's exquisite. Mm-hmm. Venue to sit and have that cup of coffee or have that paired drink with your food. And we have an art gallery downtown, so you can walk mm-hmm. around downtown, walk down the street, stick your head in the different shops and do your shopping. You want to go out into Wolfpen Gap Trail System mm-hmm. and ride with your friends all day and take in everything. That is one of the most beautiful areas out around Shady Lake and all out in the Wolfpen Gap system.
So specifically, Wolfpen Gap was the first closed-loop continuous trail system in Arkansas, specifically dedicated to ATV motocross type vehicles.
And it's a huge draw here.
What is it, like 52 miles of trails, I think, in the closed loop? So it's somewhere in like high 40s, low 50s, I think.
I've seen a couple of different numbers, so I guess that would be one of those fact checks.
Yeah, we fast fact that, yeah. Uh-huh.
Of course, there's mountain biking. Mm-hmm. There's hiking. If you want to get out in the cabin with your significant other and mm-hmm. get in a hot tub with a glass of wine.
We've got all those places. Yeah, definitely. Because it is truly the outdoors that initially, I believe, draws people to Mena. So Mena is, you know, located in the heart of the Ouachita Mountains, you know, at the base of Rich Mountain. And you've got Queen Wilhelmina State Park and Cossetot River State Park.
And you have the Talamina National Scenic Byway, which is from Mena to Tallahena. That is absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the best drives in the country. And a lot of people come here, especially in the fall, for the foliage to take advantage of everything that is beautiful about the fall in this area.
You've got to really watch yourself on the roads in the fall here, because there's a ton of people. There's a ton of people that come specifically for that. Yeah.
Little Missouri Falls is a, put it on your list. When you come to Mena, you must go and see that. We really do have a lot to offer. And with the development of the bike trails here, I really hope that people can come and take advantage more of the ecotourism. The Ouachita Trail goes through here. That's 223 something miles
That traverses the state. Yeah.
It ends over in Little Rock, I believe.
Yeah, so, I think so.
There's many trails here. It's clean.
It's clean.
It's beautiful. The water's clear.
And that's the thing, is what I feel people initially are drawn to Mena for: the outdoors, okay, for the natural beauty, for the outdoors activities. But then they get here and they realize how safe and how quiet it is. And that, as Jerry said in a previous episode, that we're kind of one of those towns that tends to roll up the street at five. You know, we're starting to have places like the Ouachitas that are staying open later and providing things like that. But, you know, they're initially brought here for that outdoor beauty. And I mean, the kayaking, the hiking, the trail running, all that stuff. And then they see how neat the downtown area is. And so that's a whole nother component to it. Like you were mentioning about, you know, the art galleries, the whole downtown historic district, the Ouachita Little Theater.
And we have a pretty good food scene going on here.
We really do.
Just downtown. I mean, there's, if you want sushi rolls, we have that, and quite good ones, actually, and great burgers and Italian food. And so there's, while we're small, we are mighty in the things that we have to offer in our small town.
There was an article that was written on Mena a couple years back, and I don't remember the exact line, but as I was reading it, it really struck me that the way the author described Mena as a surprisingly cosmopolitan small town.
It really is. I think that does take people, catches them off guard a bit, because you don't expect a town of 6,000 people, that's a 10 years ago census anyway, that it's going to have an art gallery that hosts national shows.
Right.
A very active little theater that's really quite good.
There's actually a couple hidden pockets, but there's a very specific hidden pocket of amazing artists in this community. Yes. So, I mean, not only, you know, have you got painters, you've got potters, fiber artists, photographers. We have a lot of photographers in this area, and they're all just absolutely amazing. But a gentleman who was actually a very famous painter in those circles, landscape painter, Tyrone Lewis, was from here. He sadly passed away a few years ago, but his work goes for tens of thousands of dollars and is sold across the world.
Monte Philpot in the Visitor Center has displayed the Ouachita portrait, and that has actually been displayed in the Senate building in D.C.
Yes.
So, and it hangs in the Visitor Center, so it's open for anyone to come see at any time. And the work is striking, and the medium that she used, and they're all local people that she's portrayed in her portraits, and she really captured the essence of who they are, and it really comes off the canvas and I think really speaks to people.
Those are some amazing portraits, and what surprised me about them was when you're looking at them, you expect them to be an oil painting or an acrylic, and you start to read the description and they are actually Prismacolored pencils.
Yes.
Colored pencils that she did these with, Prismacolored pencils, and they look like paintings.
They do. It's quite
It's striking. So, so Mena is just an amazing place to visit. And we'll kind of give you some details on how to get more information on that. But Pasha specifically, where her office is in the historic KCS Depot. And that depot also serves as the visitor center. It's really the main landmark in Mena.
It is. And it is so cool. The building had its 100th birthday, November 8th. So we were wanting to have a big birthday celebration, but we decided we would do COVID instead. So
I'm very disappointed now.
I was very disappointed.
I can just imagine a gigantic birthday hat on top of the depot. That would have been cool. Yeah.
So we're still going to do something. Regret that it wasn't on the actual day or right there around
but
that
you're gonna,
date.
But the building won't know the difference. It'll just be happy it's having a party.
Right. But it's gorgeous. If those walls could talk. Mm-hmm. So I encourage everyone to stop by.
Well, and the interesting thing about the depot is originally there was like a wood depot in that same spot. And then the current brick version was built. I don't know if that was just torn down or it burned down. I can't remember the exact history of that. But the current depot was built in 1920. And it was used by KCS for many, many, many years. Pasha has has volunteers who help her out with keeping the visitor center open. And one of them used to tell a story of walking up to that ticket window when he was like, I don't know, 12 years old, buying a ticket to California and getting on the train all by himself to go see family.
Yeah, regrettably, there's no passenger rail through there anymore. It's only freight. And I think that would be super cool.
Right. We'd love to have that. I think I actually tried to make that happen. It wasn't working. But anyways, but the building itself, when passenger service stopped, and that was in like 67 or 69, when passenger service stopped. And then there started to be issues with local, like the freight stops. And something happened where KCS decided that they were no longer going to stop a train in Mena. Okay. And there was local business owners that really rallied against that, you know, who depended on that train stopping to move their goods and products and services. So basically the depot was shut down by KCS and it fell into complete disrepair over the years. I mean, just...
Yeah, there was pictures. It was horrible.
Horrible. Looking like squatters were living there. Right. Right. But a local group of citizens got together and said, we want to revive this depot.
I believe that was 86, right?
I think so. I knew 80s. I couldn't remember the exact year. But they said they wanted to revive this depot. And the city somehow had struck a deal with KCS to purchase the depot for $1. So the depot itself, the building, and just the, basically the little plot of land it was sitting on was deeded to the city. So this group of volunteers gets together and they start doing fundraising and they get the materials and they revived it.
And guys, the floors in there, oh my gosh, must see.
Gorgeous. Bathroom floors, especially that honeycomb tile. Oh my gosh. But with this restoration, they did their best to find as many original materials as they could to keep it all the way it was, you know, when it was first built. And they did such a good job that they were awarded the Bootstrap Award by Arkansas Tourism that year because they did this with no outside funding. There wasn't any money that came from anywhere other than them doing fundraising. They didn't receive any grants. There wasn't a budget in the city coffer for it. They did this all through volunteer.
And this is on the historic register. Mm-hmm. So they have to, not as strict on the inside, but definitely on the outside. Mm-hmm. They are under very strict guidelines to what they can and cannot do.
Right, right. But it is a gorgeous building, and Pasha is lucky to have her office there. I mean, we could sit here and talk about the depot forever because you know my love for that building.
Yes.
It is. I'm very, very...
It's a blessing to that we have it here. There are so many people that come through, visitors, that their towns have demolished their old depots. Mm-hmm. So the fact that ours is still standing, one, but is in the condition that it's in.
And in
we
use.
Are truly, right, we're truly blessed to have that in our community.
You cannot miss the depot when you're driving through Mena. They keep pretty regular open hours for people to come in. And that's where you're going to come in and visit with Pasha or any of her volunteers. If you've got any questions about, you know, what to do and what to see or where to eat, where to shop while you're in Mena, you go to the depot, you visit with Pasha. She's got all kinds of literature and materials there so she can hook you up with a vacation packet. Or if you have visited Mena and you've decided that you've fallen in love like so many people have, she can get you a relocation packet.
That's right. The way that it is set up, the Mena advertising and promotion is the office is housed over on the museum side and the Chamber of Commerce is housed on the other end of the building.
So if you haven't been into the historic KCS Depot, which is where Pasha's office is, it is the main landmark in Mena. It serves as the visitor center for tourism and it houses the portraits of Monta Philpott and a museum of Mena history. There's a specific Lum and Abner room in there. Go check out the bathrooms. Okay, that is the coolest. Go check out the men's bathroom because you don't find urinals of that age or still like that condition. I mean, there was a lady who came in and wanted to actually take photos of the bathrooms because she was putting together an interesting bathrooms book and she'd never seen urinals that old in that condition still.
Well, that made me think U.S. Motors, which is at NEDEC now, but largest employer here, they donated a drinking fountain, water fountain. And I look at that and I see our time now with COVID and I think that would have never...
It wouldn't fly. You know, Pasha, I had planned to ask you how COVID had affected tourism this year, but you really kind of already answered that question. I mean, the chamber, the AMP, and the local businesses weathered the pandemic, which obviously it's not over, but I do feel like we're on the other side of it. I really, truly do, just my opinion. But it weathered much better than what you thought.
Yeah, and as far as the numbers, I mean, we're 18 to 20% over the year before.
So tourism numbers, actual revenue numbers spent in town was up. up?
For the last 6 or 7 months.
Wow. So
very unexpected. In March, when we first shut everything down, I was literally sick to my stomach. Mm-hmm. What is going to happen to our businesses? What is our town going to look like when this is over? Can we weather this storm?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially with our restaurants, because they just got shut down. So we kind of reached out businesses that weren't even chamber members, which we, you know, we are a member-driven organization.
Mm-hmm. The members have the benefits. That's why you join. It is kind of like a secret club.
But because we were in such uncharted territory, we even reached out to non-member businesses and tried to let people know what was going on with them. Are you open? Are you, mm-hmm. you know, because places went to only take out or whatever when this first started. Now, we've since gotten away with that because we are so much more opened up now. We're at 66% capacity.
Right.
But just trying to navigate those waters. What can we do to help everybody get to the other side of this so we remain intact, so we don't have a bunch of shuttered businesses? Because we are small, we can rally, I think, together, more close-knit, more take care of your neighbor. And so that's one of the things I truly adore about being here is people still do rally together and come to each other's aid when they need it.
You see that not just in the business community, but this is an extremely tight-knit community, a very supportive area. Anytime there's any kind of disaster or tragedy befalls a family, I mean, you see people out there holding hamburger cookouts and, you know, starting bank accounts and getting donations and doing everything they can to help each other. And that is it's a beautiful thing about MENA, that we still operate that way. You know, small enough to know everyone's name, but large enough to have some fun stuff to do. So, and to social distance. So to social distance, for sure. So, well, is there anything that we didn't get to touch on that you want to make sure that our listeners are aware of?
If you are looking to find out more information, visit MENA.com or MENAPokeChamber.com.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone numbers, everything is out there. Email, if you have any questions.
Mm-hmm.
Get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Happy to help in any way that we can. And come see us.
Yeah.
Come play with us. Stay safe and get dirty.
Stay safe and get dirty. Yeah. I mean, Pasha would be happy to send you, like I said, a vacation packet or a relocation packet. And there's no charge for those to be mailed out. Still
not
correct.
Enough.
So if you're old school like me and you like to have that actual literature in your hand instead of looking at it online, you can request hard copies of that and she'll mail them out. But as she said, visit MENA.com and MENAPokeChamber.com. The KCS Depot is located at
524 Sherwood Avenue.
Right in the heart of MENA. So you really can't miss it when you're coming through. And what open hours are you trying to keep for the visitor center right now?
Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, mm-hmm. and Saturday, 10 to 2.
10 to 2.
We've had our volunteers.
They're helping you keep
it. We're
yeah.
trying to get things mm-hmm. going back again.
Right. All right. Well, Pasha, it was an absolute pleasure having you on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking the time to visit with us.
Of
and
course.
You're a very, very good ambassador for MENA. And
you as well. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. All right, it's that portion of the show that we call Fast Facts with Producer Trey.
Go, Trey. Go, Trey. Go, Producer Trey.
Okay. Sorry, listeners. My apologies. I did not realize that was about to come out of her mouth. But that just goes to show that Jerry is back to her silly self.
Yes.
So we're happy about that. So on today's episode with Pasha, we actually had a lot of things that came up that we needed to fast fact because Pasha does a huge job. There's a lot of facets to Pasha's job and there's a lot of really, really rich history where MENA is concerned. So there were several things that came up that we needed to check on. And of course, we had producer Trey do the checking for us. So one of the first things that came up was the actual history of the radio duo Lum and Abner, not necessarily the festival, but when Lum and Abner, you know, started their little career bio or blurb. Their origin story. Thank you. So what you got for us, Trey?
So Lum and Abner was created by Chester Locke and Norris Goff, and it aired from 1931 to 1954. Before auditioning for the show to be aired, they actually auditioned for KTHS in Hot Springs. They had to change the show to Hillbillies. Originally, it wasn't about Hillbillies in Pine Ridge. It was actually a blackface show.
Ooh,
that is not PC at all.
Yeah, but it's a good thing that they did change it from a blackface show because NBC loved it. And only after a few episodes being aired, they picked it up. And through them, they broadcast over 5,000 episodes.
That's amazing. I know there are a lot of back episodes still available for Lum and Abner. We would broadcast some at the festival mm-hmm. when we held it. As I mentioned in the episode, there's an entire room in the depot dedicated to Lum and Abner, not to mention the museum that's still out in Pine Ridge that you can go visit. So they had a very long and pretty illustrious career. There's actually still a couple of homes, larger homes in MENA that were built by them. And I know someone who lives in one of those mm-hmm. houses. houses on Port Arthur. So the history is still here. I remember taking a walk around Mena one day, looked down at the sidewalk and noticed the stamp in the concrete was, I believe it was, I can't remember which of them, one of them, their parents had a construction business, but it was still stamped with that old like Goff or Lock construction. So very old sidewalk.
Dang it, we're going to have to fast fact or fast facts again.
This happens every time.
Well, we know information and then we put it with that information and, well, we think we know information.
I think half the fun is, what do we think we know? Let's just sit around and talk about all the things we think we know.
So moving on, another thing that came up is we were talking about the concessions at the festivals.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't know the history of the funnel cake.
How could you not?
As loved of a concessionary food as the funnel cake is, how did I not have that in my brain? The origin story of the funnel cake.
It's believed that funnel cakes were created by the Pennsylvania Dutch. The Pennsylvania Dutch is a small group of German immigrants who landed in Pennsylvania before the 19th century. They became a popular, not only concession, but street food because of, number one, how easy it was to get the ingredients to make it, and number two, how easy it was to store in a traveling setting or just, you know, being out all day. It was easier to store. It wasn't going to go bad if it sat in the hot afternoon sun.
Okay, well, it might be easy to get the ingredients. It might be easy to store it. But if you've eaten a funnel cake, it's not easy.
Look, if you're a big girl and you don't care about getting powdered sugar everywhere, it's easy. Oh, it's delightfully easy.
Cherry. Okay, well, I'm probably of the minority. I'm not a funnel cake fan.
What?
Well, you've always got these fashionable, cute clothes that you've gotten.
It has nothing to do with
that. You don't
want
to get the powdered sugar all over it. I want it all over my face. I want to be licking my lips for days. Like,
It has nothing to do with that. It's just too much grease for me.
That's the first ingredient in any good food. It's like, how fried and greasy is it?
Yeah, I've never been a huge, huge fried foods fan.
Fried green beans, fried pickles. Fried chicken, fried pork chops.
Fried chicken is an
fried
exception.
Fried shrimp. I mean.
Well, I'm just going to say that my favorite concession food from specifically Lemon Abner is the lemonade from Flossie's.
Mm-hmm.
They make it right there in front of you. And Flossie's corn dogs are pretty dang amazing too. But this one time at the county fair, they had huge wedges of cheesecake that they had then dipped in chocolate and it was on a stick. And I'm telling you, that probably was like 1700 calories, one thing. And you would have thought I was a big girl because I ate it like that.
Oh gosh, there's got to be a Lemon Abner this year. I'm so hungry right now. How long do I have to wait?
There's going to be one, hopefully.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. So the first weekend in June.
The person who just recovered from COVID is cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic. I love it. All right. So another thing that came up, we were discussing Wolfpin Gap and the trail system. So what'd you find, Trey?
You are right in that it was the first trail system in the Ouachita National Forest that was made specifically for four-wheelers. It was actually a system of logging trails that was taken by the U.S. Forest Service in the 80s, and they turned it into a four-wheeler system.
Nice. Well, there's a lot of features on that trail that really draw people here, besides the fact that they can come and bring their ATVs side-by-sides. You can also rent them here in Mena, but there's several river crossings. There's the two-footed oak, which is actually a tree with basically like a trunk that divides, and you can drive through this two-footed oak, and there's several caves and scenic overlooks on the trail system. So it's really beautiful. People can spend, you know, days exploring it. So it's definitely something that if you're thinking about coming to Mena, you'll want to put that on your itinerary. Have you ever been out there?
That is one of the things when we would come up to Mena from Louisiana as kids. My dad would load up a four-wheeler and we would all go out and ride that because it was just, you know, around the corner from my Grammy's cabin. And so as property values continue to rise in Polk County because of everything it has to offer, I feel very, very lucky that my Grammy had the sense to buy some property and left it to us in a trust so that our family will be enjoying that type of recreation for generations to come.
The last thing that we needed to check on in the Fast Facts session was we were talking about the KCS Depot and train service and kind of how that depot came to be owned by the city and now serve as a visitor center. But our main question was, when did passenger service stop for the Mena train depot?
The last passenger was taken on November the 3rd, 1969. You were right in the year.
Oh, yeah. Go Mena.
The last legally and known passenger, because hitchhikers...
We're not talking train hobos.
Look, I'm just saying, you can get from point A to point B. It's just not necessarily always legal.
You sound like you have personal experience with this.
Never. I would never. As a big girl... hopping on and off of trains while trying to eat my funnel cake. It's just not a reasonable expectation for me to have of myself. The fact that you two have it gives me more confidence than I should have.
I have a mental picture right now that, I mean, it's just comical. I think that it would be something that Lem and Abner would have talked about in their radio show. Jerry eating a funnel cake, trying to...
Ashley, hold my funnel cake! I gotta catch the train!
I'm imagining you sitting off the side of a train, funnel cake on a little paper plate next to you, and overalls with an old guitar playing some blues.
Don't forget the stick with the sack.
Oh, the stick with the sack.
What do they actually call it? It's a hobo sack. That's what.
Is it just a hobo sack?
Yeah.
Another thing, fast fact.
All right. So as always, thank you for listening to the Ouachita Chronicles. You can find us, along with other great shows, at theouachitapodcast.com. You can contact us at theouachitapodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you find us on Facebook and Instagram, and give us a like. If you've got suggestions for future guests or comments on shows you've heard, please send us some email. Until next time, Ashley and Jerry,
out. Thank you for listening to the Ouachita Chronicles.